Hi, it's Sydney, a chemist who's decided to share what I'm learning about polymers with others, because they pop up in more places than we all realize. This week, I'm discussing the magic that is epoxy. The first time I ever interacted with the word epoxy was when I was making a wooden table for my senior project in high school. Somehow I managed to convince my teacher that creating a nice wooden table and donating it to her classroom would qualify as a senior project. But since it was going into a classroom, I really needed to put a sturdy top onto it so it would not immediately get pencil marks and stains everywhere. This is where epoxy came into use. Among the many things epoxy can be used for, one of the main ones is surface coatings because it is clear and hard. So I covered my table with epoxy and was able to create a nice waterproof, pencil-resistant coating on it. So, at this time, I had no idea what epoxy really was, or just how important it is in our lives. But years later, when I came across it again in chemistry classes, I was shocked and also excited. At its most basic level, epoxy is a material that can be incredibly strong, low in weight, durable, tough, and chemically resistant. As a quick definition, chemical resistance just means a material does not degrade when exposed to most chemicals. So, all of these possible properties of epoxy make it a wonderful material for many tasks and are why the global epoxy market is estimated at multiple billions of dollars annually. The epoxy material is formed from mixing two components together, a resin and a hardener. The resin is a linear polymer chain, and the hardener, also called the curing agent, then cross-links those linear polymer chains together to create a polymer network. That polymer network is then what gives the output epoxy material its great properties. So, now before I delve too much into the chemistry of resins and curing agents, let's go over a brief history of the epoxy material. Like so many polymers, epoxies rose to prominence in the 1950s timeframe, but had been discovered well before their initial commercial successes. In 1934, a chemist named Paul Schlack first patented an epoxy material based on the condensation reaction of his resin with an amine. An amine is a molecule with a nitrogen bonded to three other atoms, and in this context of the reaction Schlack patented, they functioned as the hardener. The amine and the resin he used reacted to form polyamines, with water as a byproduct, hence the name of condensation reaction. And while this material was interesting, it was really never fully explored by the company Schlack worked for and was left behind. It was not until a couple years later when Pierre Castan was experimenting with similar processes that epoxy really saw it for its first applied use. In 1939, Castan patented his use of epoxy material as dental fillers. The epoxy material could be used to make great dental fillers due to its relatively fast drying time, at least in the methods he used, and also its good adhesion upon drying. And while this concept was novel, and with it he is credited as being one of the first people to really try using epoxies, this technology did not really amount to commercial success again. That being said, using epoxy as dental fillers and in dentistry is something we still use today, so Castan was definitely onto something. So all of this work then leads us into Sylvan Greenlee, who, while working for U.S. DeVoe Reynolds Company, patented the first epoxies to then be commercially produced. This epoxy material soon began being used in the surface coatings industry due to its desirable adhesion and chemical resistance. In fact, one of the main uses of epoxy even today is in the surface coating industry. Since the first commercialization of epoxy, they've seen just general commercial growth. In the 1970s, epoxy saw a spike in commercial growth due to the discovery of fiber-reinforced epoxies. Fiber-reinforced epoxies are made by mixing epoxy with glass or carbon fiber or other materials in order to improve on some of the physical properties of epoxy and make it even stronger and more durable in some cases. This type of material made by combining two different classes of materials together is called a composite. And in general, composites are becoming more and more common in our world. So, now that I've covered the general history of epoxies, I wanted to circle back and talk a little bit more about what it is and the chemistry behind it. As some background, an epoxide is a chemical group made of three atoms in a ring shape, with one of those atoms being an oxygen. In a molecule, an epoxide is just drawn as a triangle, with one of the points in the triangle being an oxygen or an O. In general, atoms prefer to be as far apart in space from each other as possible, and as their bonds allow, because they have electron clouds around them, and those clouds repel each other. However, due to the shape of an epoxide, the three atoms in the ring cannot be that far away from each other, and thus there is some repulsion between the atoms in the ring. This is also known as ring strain. All these factors together mean that the epoxide functional group is generally fairly reactive, and it will react with a lot of molecules it comes in contact with in order to break the ring and thus reduce the ring strain. Epoxy resins are linear molecules made of some molecule with epoxide groups present in the polymer as well. The curing agent is then some molecule that will react with the epoxide groups in the resin and cause them to break. In this breaking of the epoxides on a resin, new bonds are formed and the linear epoxy resin becomes a network of polymers all linked together. That cross-link structure is what gives the epoxy material so many desirable qualities. For instance, epoxies are so durable because all of the polymers in the material are attached to each other and can distribute the energy the epoxy is hit with without slipping or breaking. Additionally, that cross-link structure and the nature that making it comes from forming permanent bonds makes the epoxy material be classified as a thermoset. A thermoset is a plastic material that is set into a form and cannot be remelted and reformed into a new material. The other type of plastic material is called a thermoplastic, and there are a lot of household items that are thermoplastics. Thermoplastics will melt and at a fairly low temperature, and that's why you should not put normal Tupperwares in an oven, and if you do, it's going to mess it up pretty bad and be pretty awful to clean up. So, most epoxy resins are made of two different chemicals that are then combined into a polymer, and depending on the epoxide system used and the other chemical used, the output epoxy resin can have vastly different properties. One type of epoxy resin, called bisphenol-based, comes from mixing epoxides with bisphenol groups, or molecules that have two six-membered aromatic rings in them. This ring is really common in chemistry and goes by many names like phenol or benzene, among others. And even if you are not a chemist, you have probably seen molecules people draw have those weird hexagons with alternating single and double lines in them and thought, wow, that looks hard. Or at least that's what I thought when I saw those groups in high school. But that's what these two aromatic rings in bisphenol groups, that's what I'm talking about. Anyways, an interesting fact about these bisphenol type molecules is that they have come under a lot of scrutiny in the past decade for their ability to mimic estrogen. Bisphenol A, or BPA, was especially targeted in the scrutiny because although it's not great at mimicking estrogen, BPA was so vastly present in plastic materials in our society that it still could cause various hormonal problems in women, like early puberty. Now, many items tout that they are BPA-free, but often the BPA was just replaced with other bisphenol products that could have the same estrogen-mimicking effects and have not been tested for them. So anyways, bisphenol-based epoxy resins are formed from mixing bisphenol molecules with epoxy groups systematically to form linear polymers with epoxide rings only present at the ends of the molecule. Because these epoxide groups are only present at the ends of the polymer, changing the length of the polymer can vastly change the output epoxy material properties. The epoxide groups are only at the end, and those are the only things that undergo cross-linking, so lessening the number of them present in the resin by lengthening the polymer length proportionally lessens the amount of cross-linking the resin undergoes. Lessening the cross-linking produced means that the resultant epoxy material will be less stiff and hard and more flexible. In fact, bisphenol-based resins can sometimes result in an epoxy material that seems to be more thermoplastic in its properties rather than the typical thermoset epoxy material. So this resin type is in direct contrast to another resin called Novolax. In Novolax, most monomer units have an epoxide group attached, meaning there's a really high number of epoxides that can participate in cross-linking. This means in Novolax, they're very highly cross-linked once exposed to a curing agent and thus very hard and stiff. Interestingly, in most resins, the epoxide group comes from a molecule type called an epichlorohydrin. Epichlorohydrins have an epoxide present at one end and a chlorine present at the other, and the resin is then formed by reacting the epichlorohydrin, so the chlorine pops off, and the epoxide side is then attached to the molecule. This means that resins have residual chlorine in the structure, which is fine in many cases, but not all. The resin commonly used in cases where residual chlorine is a problem is called an aliphatic resin. In these resins, the epoxide group is attached directly to another ring on the complex, and in order to create that structure, the resin must be synthesized differently without using an epichlorohydrin. This synthesis process is much more expensive, though, so aliphatic resins are really only used for materials that work better without chlorine ions present. For instance, the lack of chlorine in aliphatic resins means they are commonly used in electronic applications where the epoxy serves as an insulator. Insulators are meant to block the flow of electricity, so having no free chlorine ions makes them better, as free ions do conduct electricity. Thus, aliphatic resins make really great insulators. There are many more types of epoxy resins out there. In general, the goal of each resin is to give the output epoxy material unique physical properties that make the material better for serving at a particular task. I feel like I make this point a lot, but it is a mainstay of polymer engineering and chemistry in general. Small changes at a molecular level result in big changes at a physical level. Those big changes are then what makes some materials better for a given task than others, and one couldn't see that in the difference in epoxy resins. So back to epoxy, I've now come to realize there's a lot to discuss when it comes to epoxy materials and the chemistry that goes into them, and I really want to spend plenty of time and effort discussing all their applications. So I'm going to stop talking about epoxies here and leave this episode as an introduction to the history and chemistry of epoxies. Next episode will be part two of the discussion, where I will talk about the various curing agents that can be used to harden an epoxy and the factors that come into play in the hardening stage. Then I will discuss all the important applications of epoxy materials. As a final note, I got a lot of this information on this episode from what seems to be the holy grail of epoxy groups. It's called Epoxy Resins: Chemistry and Technology. Some of this book can be found through Google Preview, and it is rather expensive, but if you are really super curious and want to know, this seems to be the reference material to go for. So I will leave you there, and until my next episode on epoxy, I hope you have a fantastic week.